survive. Finally, I'm one of the hosts, Matthew Cross, Dark 1778, and with me we have some fine gentlemen. Please introduce yourselves.
Hello,
Jeez.
this is Zed, aka the Jesus.
And I'm Chase. How's it going?
So this recording date is, if I can actually remember the date, August 6, 2016. We have, as you can tell, some new hosts. Kale will be joining us more sporadically, life and all that stuff. Mad Machinations, same deal. we've all been very, very, very busy. As you can tell, we also have a new host, with Zed jumping on, which I much appreciate. He is also helping with the editing as well. Personally, for me, what has been keeping me busy this intermission, shall we say, besides everything, been working on my Linux Plus CompITA certifications along with a bunch of my DevOps and other stuff. So that is what I am working on currently. You guys, what are you guys currently working on that you can talk about? I'll caveat.
Well, currently I'm preparing to move to a place with satellite internet, so I've been downloading as many games as I could possibly think I may ever want to play onto my out of my Steam and GOG libraries before I have a data cap. And I've been doing a little preliminary prep to set up a games review blog.
Do you have a title for that?
I'm probably just going to go with post-hype reviews. With the subtitle being "I'm the One Who Waits,"
Nice.
I always wait for the Game of the Year edition of games, or at least for all the DLC to be released, and I've always found it difficult to find reviews that actually review the game in that state.
And as far as stuff that's been keeping me busy goes, I've mostly been away because I've been porting Day of the, or I have ported Day of the Tentacle to Linux. It's a game that
Congratulations.
was, yeah, woo, ship game. We released that on July the 11th, and to date, response has been really positive. We've had a few people who've got issues here and there, but primarily it's been, bugs in library dependencies. Like there's a Mesa bug, and so we've had to kind of get a few people to upgrade the version of Mesa that they're using. And there've been a couple of configuration issues with ALSA users, and we've been able to talk people through updating their ALSA configuration. But really beyond that, there haven't been any kind of blockers or showstoppers, so it's been really positive to see. But as soon as that shipped, I was able to get to work on writing an article about my experiences, which I was able to publish, what was that, a couple of weeks ago, I guess? And so that's this sort of large overview of kind of, not just my personal feelings about the game itself, but looking more at kind of what sorts of things you might encounter when you're looking at a port and what sort of concerns you might want to be aware of. And to because this is my first port and I've only done one port, I want to make sure that I was representing something more than just my own experiences, and I reached out to a bunch of other porters. And what did we have? We had Ryan Gordon, which everybody will be familiar with, Aaron Melcher, who did the Outland port. He's doing Quadrilateral Cowboy at the moment. He's done a few others as well. Leszek Godlewski, who did Painkiller Hell and Damnation and Deadfall Adventures. Ethan Lee, who's maintains FNA, which is a open source re-implementation of XNA. Which is, yeah, it's really cool. And so he's got a huge library that lots of people are sort of familiar with stuff he's worked on. And David Gao, who did the port of Keen Dreams and has done a few other little bits and pieces of porting here and there. So, like, to get this broad spectrum of people who have porting experience and be able to get them to share their own insights as well really kind of helps hammer home, what it's all about. And the fact that they don't always agree on stuff also shows that there's a lot of different ways to approach this stuff, and even for to me, Leszek's contributions there are probably the most important because he's moved on to other stuff. He doesn't find porting very rewarding, and he's working as a engine and gameplay programmer, I think now at I think it's Flying Hog Games. He's doing stuff he enjoys now, but for him to be able to feel open and candid about reflecting on the aspects that he found to be negative or contrary to his expectations, like being able to say, porting sounds great, but it's not for everyone. Like, that's a really important message. Because often when we talk about stuff that's important like this, we tend to focus only on the successes and we tend to focus only on the positive experiences. And I think that sort of bringing home the notion that it's not all rainbows and roses is really important.
Because you're working in someone else's environment, I'm curious, when you see code that is less than stellar, what goes through your head as a porter? because I'm assuming you probably saw code that you're like, what in the blue hell were they thinking?
Well, I want to say, like, off the bat, that this is the largest, most complex project I've ever worked on. And it's also one of the best structured projects I've worked on. There are things I look at and I go, wow, this is definitely not how I would do it. Wow. You know, there is, like I said, there's this kind of urge to go, oh, they're all idiots, I don't know what they're doing. But really, it's not like that. I mean, they're, as far like priority wise, they're kind of in this, whoever wrote that stuff was in the same boat as me. They wanted to get something working and they wanted to get something shipping. And sometimes we write code that isn't optimal and we don't have the chance to go back and revisit it. So I kind of always try and make sure that I'm empathizing with the fact that there's two aspects. There's one is that, like, even if it's code that I don't agree with and think is terrible, that doesn't mean that the developer that wrote it thinks that it's good. So being angry at them, you know, that's not useful. But also, programming is, with any kind of programming task, really complex ones. There are multiple valid approaches, and what seems obvious and resonates with one person is not what seems obvious and resonates with another. And so you just go suck it up and live with it. But it's great though, like, because there's code there from the 80s. There's stuff there from, like, the original Maniac Mansion release, written by, like, Ron Gilbert and Chip Morningstar and Eric Wilmond. And that stuff, it's really interesting because it's like people go, oh, you'd see, like, lots of crazy, you know, funny comments and stuff in the code and all that sort of stuff. But when you've got an engine that you use over time, you have the opportunity every time you revisit it to sort of tweak things up and tune things up and polish things. And I feel like what I'm seeing is the result of a lot of, you know, like, all that kind of crazy stuff has been removed over time because it really is craft. And the core engine has gone through a bunch of games, and also the remastered edition engine, because it was based on the Monkey Island stuff from their special editions. You know, that's gone through a couple of games as well. So a lot of the rough edges have been, you know, polished over and sorted out. But yeah, when you find code that you don't agree with, there's nothing you can do. Like, you can't just go, man, I really hate the way the sound system works, I'm going to rewrite the entire thing. Because that's a waste of your time. That's a waste of everybody who's waiting for the game's time. You know, like, you just got to do it.
It's not like with, you know, the open source development, you have the luxury of not having a shipping date for one.
Yeah. I mean, I've worked on open source projects where we had target dates, and that was great. But there's, like you say, it's a very different atmosphere, and it's a very different level of commitment that you feel, and a very different level of investment that you feel. And yeah, I would say that with an open source project, even when I've got a deadline, if I'm not feeling it that day, I feel comfortable going, I'll just leave this until I feel up to it, because I know I'm going to do better work when I do. But when you've got a contract involved and, you know, whatever time frames the contract may have, and then you know that you've got Linux users who are waiting for the game, if you have a target release date, then you've got that as well, and you've got all of these kind of pressures pushing at you in a way that makes it very difficult to just go, I'm going to have a day off because I know I'm going to do better work after that. You know, like, it's tricky to manage those pressures, and especially when you have Linux users who, you know, there's no maliciousness behind it. You know, everybody means well, and it comes from a place of enthusiasm and passion. But, you know, when you have a, you can't go one day without a Linux user contacting you and going, man, when is this port ready? It's taking too long. Or, you know, I'm really angry that the port's, or really, really frustrated that the port's not ready yet and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, it's like, I can't really talk about this stuff right now. You gotta be patient and wait.
Speaking of such things as, you know, ports to Linux and whatnot, let's talk a little bit about Linux market share and whatnot as a generic topic for the news segment. So, Rust, talk some sales. The guy who made this game, he also did Gary's Mod too. I do not really know what to think of this guy, to be honest at times.
I feel like there's a bunch of context that a lot of Linux users aren't necessarily familiar with. And like before Gary Smog came to Linux, Gary was always sort of celebrated as this really cheeky character who, you know, was kind of vaguely offensive about everything. You know, like he's famous for being this kind of jokey ass, if you want to kind of take it that way. And then he mentioned, you know, like he talks about some Linux stuff, and I'm like, wow, this is in line with how he treats everything else. But for Linux users, that was a very personal thing.
It's
kind of like he walked into somebody else's bar and acted like he was it's kind of like walking into a new bar and acting like you're at your usual stop. You go to a different pub and you start acting like you're like everybody knows you. People are going to look at you and go, excuse me?
Well, this is totally true. Like, it is definitely a thing of like a clash of people who aren't familiar with Gary versus Gary interacting with people that he's not familiar with. But it's probably important to remember as well that like all of this took place on Twitter, which is the same place that he was already existing. And I feel like there's this really interesting thing that we have at the moment that a lot of people aren't conscious of, is that we have stuff that really blurs the lines between private interaction and public interaction. So when you hop on Twitter and you see people talking to you and stuff, that feels like a very personal, very private thing. And when you talk to someone, you know, when you send someone a message or you tweet at someone, that feels like it's personal and private, but it's not. Like, these are kind of public spaces that are viewable to anyone.
You're sending it out to 300 million people. I'm pretty... That's what message is for.
Yeah. And like, this is a big problem because we're not conscious of this. And this happens in your home. You're sitting at your home, you're at your desk, or your workplace, and you're at your desk, and you've got all these people who are coming into your... what is normally your private space, or your space that you've, you know, customized and made your own, and it's where you're comfortable. And then you have people who think that they're in their comfortable place because they're sitting there writing it from their home or from their car or wherever. And you've got this really interesting like clash of contexts that leads people to get angry and to treat things as sort of inappropriate personal communication when it's kind of in a public space, and to say stuff that's not really appropriate for public spaces as well. Not that Gary's been doing that, and not that people, well, I'm sure people have been doing that to Gary, but, you know, like, just in general, there are these kinds of challenges that we face when we're talking to people online.
Yeah. Let's be honest, like, Twitter is seriously probably the worst place to try to have any communication at 140 character limit or flow of conversation.
Yeah, it's not a very useful or practical communication medium, but I do think that clash of contexts has like a massive impact on how things are received and how things are how people express themselves.
I think this isn't a criticism completely of Linux users, but I think Linux users are so used to the Jonathan Blow type mentality when it comes to, you know what I mean, though.
Like, well, I think that's another great example. Is like
that condescending, this is how, almost.
Well, that's how John is. That's how he talks about everything. Like, it's anything Linux specific, but Linux users take it personally because they only look at the Linux specific stuff.
That's the thing. what is a personality clash, because that is how they are. They speak in well, condescending terms in Jonathan Blow's case. Or in Gary's case, he comes across, well, quite frankly, as a smarmy wise ass. But, but let's be honest.
But that's his shtick. Like, that's who he's always presented himself as.
That's who they are. The problem is, I think sometimes Linux users, you know, me being one, we tend to be a little hypersensitive to any, what might be come across as douchey, but there's actually constructive stuff in there, if you actually look past the BS. And I think
there's a thing that I like to call...
we're a little hypersensitive to that.
Yeah, yeah. There's a thing that I like to call like repression backlash, where like you've got people who feel like they've been ignored or mistreated, and then as soon as there's sort of broader recognition for them, they go, all right, well, after all of this, we deserve to be treated at least as well as everyone else. And I feel like Linux users have this we've kind of been ridiculed and laughed at by the industry for a very long time. And so after putting up with all of that, it's easy to go, well, I've lived through all this crap, and now I deserve better than what I'm getting. And that's a valid way to feel, I guess. But it leads Linux users to come across as being very sensitive about stuff. And when Gary says, I haven't made any Linux sales, you know, they're statistically insignificant and it wasn't profitable or anything like that. And people go, yeah, but you crap because you haven't put up the Linux icon on the Steam store or something. People don't know, you're not advertising that has Linux support, so obviously your numbers are crap. It's like, well, he's aware of that, you know? Being upset about that isn't going to solve anything.
Crap.
I think we crunched the numbers a little bit before the cast, and it's comparable percentage-wise of total Linux users on Steam and total Windows users on Steam. The percentage of people that have bought Rust for Linux and bought Rust for Windows is very close.
It's about 1 in 20, or 1 in 25, actually.
Yeah, for both.
For both platforms, because he's sold 4 million. There's about a million, I mean, because Linux falls into like what, about 1%, give or take, on the month on Steam. So you're talking about, 1%, you're talking 800,000 to a million users that are Nix specific.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
and I think that it's interesting to note that the game has managed to achieve that in spite of Gary intentionally or otherwise shitting off Linux users,
Exactly. And if you look at the sales numbers, you're talking 84 million active other Steam users. So, I mean, the sales are pretty comparable to about 1 in 25 across the board.
I'm actually willing to bet that there's a number of those purchases that were made to spite him.
Maybe, I don't know. I get the impression that everyone is all very, well, if you don't want our money, or if you don't want to say nice things about Linux, then you don't get our money. Like I feel like that's the dominant attitude, rather than people going, well, I'm going to show you, I'm going to support you, and then you'll be sorry.
I want to ask kind of a generic question, but it kind of ties into this. Guys like Jonathan Blow and Gary, they have made criticisms about Linux. Geez, as someone who uses it, do you feel some of their criticisms are valid though that they have made?
Yeah, some of them definitely, totally, for sure. I just
need a yes or no answer. I don't want to get into too far.
This comes back to sort of what we were talking about earlier about stylistic choices. When you're like particularly looking at Blow's commentary on his Linux experiences, he wants to do things in a very specific way, and sometimes his approaches aren't really the way that stuff on Linux has been designed to work. And I don't think that that's necessarily means that he's a bad coder. It doesn't necessarily mean that stuff that's on Linux is poorly written. It just means that there's a level of incompatibility, I guess, between the stuff that's available and the stuff that he wants to use or wants to do. If that makes sense at all, I'm like,
there's no overlap on that.
its personal coding style does not suit the way that Linux works.
It's not just coding style. It's also like exactly. software design approaches. Like he wants to do. He also likes to work fairly low level, I think, and he prefers to have more control at a lower level. And so, like particularly looking at audio, he wants to do things in ways that will make more work for him than if he just accepted that he didn't have that low level control and worked with other things like OpenAL or SDL audio. I would say that OpenAL would probably be closer to what he wanted, but yeah, like he's not willing to investigate those.
On a side note, let's be honest, the Linux sound subset is
It's far from perfect. perfect.
So
but
for
I don't
a
think...
freak like he would be at a low level, that is too many variables.
Yeah, I was just dealing with just desktop audio makes me want to pull my hair out sometimes on Linux.
That's often been like one of his big points is that audio is terrible. It all depends upon what your tolerances are, and I know that, like there are certain types of forms that I really hate filling out, and I will piss and moan and grumble throughout the whole thing. And say nasty things about people's ancestry and their personal habits. And that's kind of like a coping mechanism. And maybe that's how it is for Jonathan Blow is that as well, that he's like, he's doing this stuff, he doesn't enjoy it, and he needs to vent about it. But again, maybe somewhere like Twitter isn't the right place to vent your personal frustrations if you don't want them to be your public representation of your opinions.
Yeah, I use Twitter to barf snark at the internet. That's all I really use it for. Occasional notifications of when I'm broadcasting or something, but even then, I'm considering my usual content, I don't expect a huge response from that.
I feel like it's been a wonderful way for me to make contact with people and a wonderful way for me to get in touch with and grow relationships with people in other mediums. Like I feel like Twitter is an interesting and functional gateway to building more interesting relationships with people elsewhere. But as far as being like a communication mechanism or as far as being any kind of content discovery mechanism, it's not really that useful.
But anyway, back on the topic.
Yeah, like looking at numbers as well, like 34,000 Linux sales, assuming that they're full price, which chances of them being full price kind of, they're not all going to be full price, but that's like a maximum of nearly, 700,000 dollars worth of sales, like that.
Money back.
That's considering that he's making use of upstream Unity Linux support. It has to have made back the Linux support overheads. But we're also working with creative mediums, and if your heart's not in it and you're not excited about it, then no amount of money makes you enjoy it. You know, if that makes sense. So like. I feel like it's totally fair for anybody who doesn't want to support Linux to just not be here, because I think our platform as a whole is going to be better if it's only populated by people who are excited about Linux.
Yeah.
Like, that's true for any platform, but yeah. Like, there are a number of times I've played, even on, be it Linux or console, and you play something that's a bad port, and you know that it's just for the fact that it hasn't been patched in 6 months, and it's terrible. Great, I'm stuck with this thing. Why did you even bother? I would have preferred to not have had the opportunity to buy this thing.
Well,
I think
it's not often that I've encountered that, but I have encountered it.
I think there's also an aspect to Gary's comments that I think is often misunderstood and misinterpreted. It sounds like, and I don't constantly read his feed because
nor do I.
He doesn't always have stuff that I'm interested in reading. But from what I have read, it sounds like he wants to support Linux and is supporting Linux regardless of whether he makes money out of it or not. And when he's talking about not making many sales and Linux not being statistically significant and that sort of thing, it seems to be perhaps that it's an expression of him saying, I'm supporting Linux even though it's not making me a significant amount of money compared to other platforms. And that in itself is a really positive message that I think a lot of people are kind of overlooking, do you think?
Well, again, you've got 140 characters, so he stated the state of affairs. He wasn't, I don't think he was even overly snarky. He just didn't add any clarification. He just kind of threw, here's some facts and a little bit of how I feel about it. And he waited, and people possibly jumped on him too quickly, if anything. Again, it's, when I first saw that story, I thought it was kind of a non-story. Like, oh, someone said that they didn't sell very many units on Linux yet. Okay.
I was going to say, when I saw it, I was like, oh, some sale numbers. Cool. You know,
when I say that he's kind of been talking about this stuff, this is like a long period of time, you know, the narrative across a long period of time, rather than this most recent tweet, which doesn't have any real context to it.
I was going to say, he's been doing this since, I mean, you know, SteamOS and, you know, Steam for Linux was announced, and people were poking him.
Even before that.
Well,
as Gary's Mod landed on Linux, really. Before Gary's Mod landed on Linux.
That's what I mean. When people were really poking him, when Steam was in the beta for Linux back in, like, 2012.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, no, I thought you said SteamOS, and I was like, no, it was way before that.
When, like, Steam itself was for beta in Linux. And people were already poking him because it was a source-based game. Oh, you can put it to Linux, you can port it to Linux. And he, you know, he gave his feelings on it. So, I mean, the story's been going on for almost, what, 4.5 years now?
Right.
Yeah, I suppose so, if people have been bothering you about something and then you finally do it and it doesn't pan out as well as they had hoped. A bunch of people say, like, oh, this is going to be great if you do this. And then you do it and you're like, well, this is what I expected. Is this what you expected? It didn't do very as well as you said it would.
Yeah, I do think that there's a problem with people saying that Linux support is going to get you $1 billion for a title that's been available and runs fine in Wine since before Steam existed for Linux. You're like, you got to treat that stuff as an investment in goodwill for the platform. And you know, I'm not saying that I'm not saying that Gary shouldn't feel comfortable being his snarky self, you know. But I would say that if your goal is to invest in that goodwill, then eroding that goodwill by pissing people off on Twitter is like, it doesn't get you the outcomes you want, right?
Like in public, use your words carefully.
Yeah, and like I said, you know, you got to treat this stuff as though it's public because it is.
Yeah, and but that gets us into another topic about more sales and Linux support.
Now, can I share an anecdote here?
Yeah.
That in contrast to Gary saying that he, you know, that Linux support isn't something that is financially meaningful to him. I have talked to other developers who also receive some negativity from Linux users and personally feel that they would prefer to stop supporting Linux but aren't willing to sacrifice the income because it's large enough to make a difference for them. So be nice, because you know, not everybody is in Gary's position.
Not everybody. If people aren't going to be nice, if you aren't going to be nice to people, they aren't going to do nice things for you.
I approached that developer and I was like, I'd really like to write about your experiences because I think that there's something that can be gained from this, that it's worthwhile and valuable to give Linux users a picture of the kind of impact that they can have if they're not being thoughtful about what they say. But he was very worried about upsetting people more and didn't want to talk about it, which is kind of sad. But
I could obfuscate it a bit, but and even, you know, you don't want to push them either.
Yeah, yeah. No, he wanted to just lay low and
make more games. I'm going to be 100% honest. Some people in the Linux community, when it comes to this stuff, regardless of project, I'm not saying the entire community is like this, I will caveat every way I can. Sometimes they just come across as trolls.
Yeah, like I said, you know, there's that repression backlash thing, and if you take into account the fact that people are really excited about finally being recognized as a part of the industry rather than ridiculed, then you kind of go, oh, okay, I see why people get a bit grumpy when people use PC to mean Windows. You know, like, you know, if you empathize with that position, then you can contextualize a lot of it. But if you don't have that awareness, if you don't understand the position that people are coming from, then it can be really easy to get the feeling that Linux users are right bastards and hate everything and want to complain about everything. But, like, even me...
As a brief aside, I spent 10 minutes trying to find it. But there was an article recently on Gaming Analytics where there was a press release where someone said, we will be releasing it on PC, parentheses, Windows, Mac, Linux, and, you know, end parentheses. I'm like, whoa, they used PC properly.
That's always nice to see.
Well, okay.
But like, even me, when I was working on Day of the Tentacle, like I said, I had people who were expressing their frustrations to me about the Linux port. And if I was doing this for fun, I don't know. I feel if I was someone else with a different set of priorities and a different headspace about the project, that could have been really off-putting and would have sapped my morale and would have sapped my motivation and would have made it harder for me to work on the game. Because of some of the attention I was getting. And, like, I do feel like more Linux users need to understand that there are consequences for their behavior.
One of the reasons I remain subscribed to the Introducing Borderlands 2 for Linux thread is I have spent a lot of time in that game. I've spent a lot of time in the configuration files for that game. I've used it on multiple computers. I know what issues it has. And I want to grab those people who go, like, I'm getting 10 frames per second. How dare you? I'm like, no, not how dare you. Let's figure out what your graphics card is. What are your drivers? Yeah. Which version are you using? I just want to grab them before they can anger the developers. And then yes.
Nothing represents us worse than people who aren't willing to, you know, put in time to say to help a developer understand what their problem is.
So Gary gave us some sales figures. Let's talk next about Slime Rancher, sales and Linux support. These guys have sold over 300,000 copies of this game already. And I believe this game is still in early access, if I'm not mistaken.
It still is, yes.
We're talking, what, 1,500 sales, 15, give or take, that are Linux, because they gave a breakdown of the numbers, and it was about a half a percentage of overall sales.
Yeah.
That's worth taking note of.
Well, these guys had an interesting take on it. They admit they're actually conflicted about Linux support as a whole. At that such a small margin to them, and again, every game is a different case. Some games will sell like hotcakes, you know. I mean, we just talked about a Linux game where 1 in 20 Linux users on Steam were freaking buying the thing. This is a game that 85 million people have access to. As only 300,000 is not a small number in the grand scheme of Steam.
Yeah, like this is big trap where people look at Steam's user statistics and they go, this is my game's market, and that's not the case anymore.
Nope.
You know, like, your market is a subset of the Steam user base.
Yes,
and exactly. That may or may not, you know, like 1% of Steam's market, if you're looking at the values that they publish for their hardware and software survey for Linux users, whether or not you map against that, you don't know.
Yeah. So I do find the take, these guys are very honest, though, which I actually do appreciate. I'd rather have a developer tell me, no, we're not going to probably support Linux in the future because the sales for us in our situation are just not there. I can respect that, and these guys admit they are conflicted and they are not sure if, you know, it's the right call or not.
Well, they looking at the wording, not sure if it was a good decision, but they've made the decision. They've done it.
Well, no, they have made the decision, and they're supporting it. It was just, they're saying it's they're conflicted about it. So, which to me, if they do another game, will mean that they will second guess whether or not to support Mix.
Well, I don't know whether necessarily be second guessing, but it means that it's something that they would probably sit down and think about rather than something that's a foregone conclusion, right?
Yes, mm-hmm. Because they admit they're using the Unity engine, and it's basically quote unquote just works when you hit the giant export button, which anybody who uses it, no, it doesn't work that way.
Pay attention to how their engine actually works and not their documentation, then it does just work apparently.
Yeah, there are plenty of examples of where things have run out of the box, but there are also, because Linux is still a young platform for Unity, and there have been teething issues as Unity has upgraded their renderer. They said that it kind of mostly just works for them out of the box. They've got some graphical issues. My gut says that that's going to be related to the new renderer, and that's stuff that's going to be sorted upstream by Unity's developers. And then they say they've generated a bunch of revenue. So I'm like, effort versus reward, it sounds like they're in a really good position.
They also said that, to contrast some of the more poisonous members of the Linux community we mentioned earlier, to quote, "Fortunately, the Linux audience seems to expect these things, and they've been very patient and helpful when these issues arise." So
that's another thing about early access, I think, is that the kind of people who are comfortable buying into early access are the kind of people who are willing to invest a little bit of their own time and attention in helping make sure that other Linux users will have a good experience.
Especially in Linux. Linux users are very used to submitting bug reports and so on and so forth. I actually find there's a better response from... I find that there's a much more positive response to issues in an early access game and people willing to submit bug reports. And then if the moment that game leaves early access, any remaining issues are met with vicious criticism.
For these guys, I really feel like, it's tricky. It's interesting though. I look at the comment for this article, and there are so many people saying, "Oh well, obviously they don't have very many Linux sales because I wouldn't buy an early access game." But what that fails to recognize is that there are plenty of Windows users as well and Mac users who don't want early access experiences. So, a couple of individual people expressing that they don't like it on Linux doesn't really have any impact on what those statistics mean. And it's almost like a promise that when you release, you'll do amazingly well on Linux, and that's creating those kind of false expectations that we were talking about earlier.
I was going to say, the biggest thing that I have, like reading those comments, I don't buy early access, blah, 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 blah. Apparently 300,000 other people did, though.
Right.
So...
Yeah.
That means there's 1,500 Linux early access testers, and 298,500 other platform testers. So don't buy the game until it comes out then. And if it's not your cup of tea, you have this great option of not buying it too.
Yeah, we were talking about a different game that people were complaining that it wasn't available with such and such content, and oh, I'm not going to buy it if it doesn't have that. I was like, oh, okay. I don't see
that. It's funny, the kind of the vote with your wallet thing, like that implies a silent form of protest. Like you vote with your wallet by not paying for it, not participating, and spending your time on other things. But there seem to be a lot of Linux users who think that voting with your wallet also means shouting loudly about it, and that's not what it's about.
That's
gamers in general, I think.
If it's something that, for principle, for pray, whatever reason, if it is something that you don't agree with or you don't want and you want to make a point and you're going to use the term vote with your wallet, show disinterest. That simple. You don't need to get on your soapbox or on top of Mount Everest and yell to the world, I'm not buying this!
Yes, sorry. The point I was going to make about this whole kind of whether people should be shouting and angry and voting with their wallets and stuff is, like, there are so many games being made out there, and there are so many good games that don't get enough attention that it feels really, really, really inappropriate to spend your time being angry about a game you don't like when you could be spending that same energy being enthusiastic about a game you do like.
Precisely.
Like, that's a massive disservice not only to the game that you care about, but also to the other people out there who are looking for games that they could care about, you know?
No longer do I get upset about games that I just think are bad. I just move past them. The only time I get upset about a game is I'm like, this could be so much better except for.
Well, like, I mean, it's not a game that you made, right? It's someone else's exploration of that concept. And if you want to have a different game, then you can make a different game. That's great. The fact that we've got tools that empower people to be able to do that is amazing. I love that people make games that aren't what I would make.
Yeah, and the things that I understand that any criticism that I ever write is my personal opinion. And if somebody else comes in and says, I think that game is amazing because, I'll be like, thank you. If they say, how dare you say this, I'll be like, you don't get – this is the last comment you get to make. This one will stay.
it's like geez, have you heard of the game called Sunset?
Yeah, I've been playing it. I'm finding it interesting so far.
That is – games like that – that Firewatch, it reminds me of.
Almost. I love Firewatch.
I know. Well, I know you do. You have almost like 100 hours last time I saw.
Yeah. I've spent a lot of time playing that game.
For a game that has one ending. Many paths, but one ending.
What I was going to say is these type of games are very personal taste.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I've looked at Sunset. I would say I would probably buy it, but not at the price tag that they have it for. Not because I don't want to support the developer, just because I don't see the value of that experience at that price. But
that's fine.
But see, that's not the mentality some that shout from the top of the mountain take.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the other problem with, like, probably. Sunset is that there are people who are saying that that game shouldn't exist at all.
That's ridiculous.
And that's nonsense. That's completely bad. People go, oh, you know, if there are more games like this, then that's going to ruin games. And that's bollocks. That's absolutely untrue.
The people that made that game aren't going to make the game that you want to play because they wanted to make that game. That's...
Yeah, it's not diminishing the number of games that aren't that game. It's enriching the diversity of what we have available.
Exactly. And for that, Linux users, we're all about one thing. We argue about desktops. We argue about freaking text editors. What do we always preach about? And that is choice. So why knock the personal choice? And this is something in those particular arguments that I mentioned prior that I have never understood.
Yeah, I feel like I don't think any consumer or user or appreciator is the term I like to use for appreciating artistic works. I don't think that any appreciator has a right to influence the way that a creator feels about their own work.
No. Going back and looking at older works, Hardened Reset Redux, not coming to Linux. Not going to lie, kind of bummed about this one. I have the original Hard Reset. And I love that game today. Actually, I have the Redux.
Wait, Hard Reset is an old game?
It's like 2011. So
oh, it's new then. Anything newer than 1993 is new, right?
says the porter of the 1980s game, yes.
Descent 3 and onwards, that's new.
All right, I'll give it. I'm kind of bummed about this because these are the guys over at Flying Hogs who Lejack, who ported Deadfall and Painkiller, now works for. So I was hoping with his move over there that this would actually happen. Now, there, the thing that set this off, there was some stuff in the Steam database, which, grain of salt always.
Mm-hmm.
But I was really hoping. Even looking from their perspective, though, the Redux hasn't sold as well as they had hoped. So they are not going to put porting cost, because let's be honest, there's a cost of porting a game.
Yeah, definitely.
And it has not sold well enough to justify that.
Otherwise,
cost
we don't get paid.
Exactly. And hate to break it to the free software only people. People have to make money.
Mm-hmm.
I do know some porters who do a lot of work for free or as a favor. And I'm like, I'm in two minds about this. I'm like, on one hand, it's amazing that you're putting in this effort and that effort is heartfelt, and that's just, you know, that's a really brilliant expression of enthusiasm. But on the other hand, can it create false expectations of the costs and associated overheads with supporting Linux? Does that mean that if they want to pay someone next time, that they'll go, oh yeah, it's not going to be that much, and then suddenly discover that it does cost a little bit of money and go, yeah, no, we can't afford that? It's a tricky thing.
If you have a friend who does you a favor and mows your lawn for the weekend when you're out of town, and then you come back into town and, you know, your grass starts growing again, why would you be surprised? I mean, it's like you got to pay the kid next door next time, because just because somebody did you a favor doesn't necessarily mean you're for free in the future. I think, yes, it could create that expectation, but I think if you allow yourself to expect that, you're biting yourself in the tuchus.
Yeah, I wasn't sort of meaning necessarily about, well, maybe it is. Like, I know that there are other developers out there who, and I do a lot of stuff for free. Like, I do a lot of stuff where, you know, a developer's having a problem, and I go, hey, you know, let's work through your problem. I'll help you sort out your bugs and stuff. Sweet, we're done. But I only do that for developers that I know are interested in supporting Linux. Like, I don't go out and chase down people who don't support Linux or aren't excited about Linux and say, yeah, I'll help you out.
Getting back onto this particular topic, though.
But yeah, hard reset.
I think that I can understand their reason for not coming to Linux, though.
Well, it sounds like they were starting to investigate that, at least. And sometimes you try something and it doesn't work, you know? Like, sometimes you go, yeah, I'd like to port this. It looks like it's doable. And then you get right down into it and you go, nah, it's just, it's going to cost us too much. It's going to be too much hassle. It's going to be too much work. And it really sucks, but we have to let it go. And I feel like for Linux users, that's got to be acceptable. Like, if you get people who just go, no, it's totally uncool that, I don't know, like, Gianna Sisters isn't on Linux. It's absolutely terrible. I mean, like, I feel like it's bad that there hasn't been much communication about that project, and that most Linux users don't really know what's going on. But I think it's got to be okay for a developer to feel comfortable saying, we tried and we couldn't do it.
I just said that's fair enough. I mean, and here it says specifically, hard reset isn't popular enough to justify the Linux port.
And sorry about that.
Bram. That was the Linux port. Oh, that was the hard reset developers just driving off. You know, they're like, sorry, no Linux port. Bam!
Which actually is appropriately kind of what it is, but they gave a reason.
but yeah, like...
No, we can't do it. That's good communication. A clear no is nice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I feel like this is a really positive thing. I totally agree.
And
it's disappointing, and it's okay to feel disappointed, but I think we also need to go, this is good. Thank you for telling us about this.
Yes, exactly. And, you know,
I'm going to miss another, not getting another dumb shooter on the platform, but.
I was going to say, having played the original before the Redux, yes, I will miss the fact that really the only dumb shooter that we have on here is Serious Sam. Why I love me some Serious Sam, the Metro games are not dumb shooters. Sorry, that those don't count.
And but if it weren't for the multiplayer, I think the new Doom would have been a trivial port. I mean, it uses OpenGL and Vulkan on Windows. It doesn't use DirectX.
You are correct, but I don't think that Doom or its source code engine will ever see the light of day now that John Carmack is on at id.
Well, I think it's important to recognize that John Carmack wasn't necessarily the driving force behind. I think he was a driving force behind Source releases, but I don't think he was a driving force behind Linux releases.
No. He's been very. This kind of ties back into like Jonathan Blow and all that stuff. John Carmack has been very critical of Linux. You know,
sort of.
He's talked about why not? What's wrong with releasing games via wrappers, i.e.
Wine. And I don't feel like that's being critical of Linux. I think that's expressing favor for one avenue of trying to service Linux users. I don't necessarily agree with it, and I feel like a lot of the reasoning that he backs things up with is uncharacteristically shallow. Like, he seems to be a very thoughtful person who's very interested in exploring new things and pushing the envelope and doing cool stuff. But it seems like he's not applying that same kind of thoughtfulness with regards to his comments about Linux. But I feel like if people want to pursue wrappers, that's great. That's cool.
I don't see a problem with it being released as a wrapper. There's System Shock 2. They don't have the source code, so they had to do it as a wrapper. That's what they said. That's why they did it that way.
Right.
They put so much work into it. It works perfectly. It works. I have absolutely no. I didn't realize it was done with Wine until I looked in for the configuration file because I wanted to tweak something.
I don't have very much familiarity with System Shock 2, but I kind of, before saying that they put a lot of work in, I feel like you kind of got to say that they were standing on the shoulders of a lot of existing Wine work.
Oh, absolutely. I'm just saying they were very well documented. The actual configuration of that Wine wrapper was incredibly well done by the standards of wrapped releases.
Yeah. Like System Shock already had platinum rating for Wine. I'd say that the work that they did that was good work was in making sure that it was packaged well and that it shipped well. And making sure that they were, being aware of that kind of stuff, if that makes sense.
But anyway, back on the topic. I think the fact that these guys are just being open and honest and being like, game didn't sell well enough, it's not justifiable cost to put it to another platform. Okay, thank you. I can respect that, and that's where I fall on that.
Getting back to incomplete information, I remember when Minor Key Games mentioned some Linux numbers once, and it's like our Linux numbers were very minuscule, and it represents a very very small portion of our market share, and we haven't made our porting money back. Well, that was either quoted out of context, or it was just he didn't clarify enough. He later clarified and said, "It's like no, we haven't made our money back. Period." But yeah, that was a day one release. I think that was Super Win the Game.
Yeah, okay.
But speaking of people who like to talk about platforms, we've talked Jonathan Blow, we've talked about Gary, we've talked a little bit about John Carmack. Let's talk about Tim Sweeney and the lovely co-founder of Epic Games and his continued slapping of Windows, I find entertaining, but also a little disheartening. Tim Sweeney is basically talking about Windows essentially gutting the 32-bit libraries that make up Steam, and throwing them out the window with the new Windows Universal platform. And basically sabotaging Steam from within. And about the lack of an open platform. That last part is where I take my issue.
Yeah, well, first of all, I don't have a problem with an operating system designed to break compatibility. The thing is, they're not keeping the old version around to serve the market. Come out with a new operating system, sure, but there's still demand for the other one, so leave it around. But that's, you know, it's Microsoft. They're going to do what they want to do. And yes, no, there are multiple operating systems. There's many operating systems out there, sir. If you want an open platform, port your stuff to another platform that's open. There you go.
Yeah. I was going to say, my take is really, it's not even that it's like, oh, port it to Linux. Linux is an option. The problem, geez, as you had mentioned in kind of the pre-record, Linux not being seen as a no weight behind the with the industry behind it, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, like I see like he's saying that we need something that's an open platform that is seen as viable by the industry, and right now Linux is still on the verge of being able to move into that space. Like, we're not there yet, and so we can't fit that role right now. Hopefully we will, but right at this very moment, we're still not, we're not a dominant platform.
No, far from.
And it's going to be a long time before we are, I think. I think slow and steady growth is better than fast, unsustainable growth for us.
Well, I mean, one can argue that, yes, the PC is a completely open platform. You can totally make a disk that's got an RTOS on it and boots right to your game. But that's... I'm being silly, of course. But, I mean, yeah, there are many options that that aren't mentioned in these...
Well, here's the thing. Geez, you bring up a good point with the lack of industry besides Valve, really. Push, mm-hmm. and you know, a lot of the engines are available. You know, Unreal and Unity and you know, Crytek and or CryEngine, whatever the hell it's called now, are available on Linux, which is great. But there's not a lot of support for the platform as a whole. You're not seeing, I hate the term AAA, big budget title games put out by, you know, Take-Two, or you're not, you might see something from, you know, what, Total War Warhammer is one that's coming out sometime soon. You'll see those type of games, but you're not seeing, like, the Grand Theft Auto 5s, you're not seeing the Metal Gear Solid 5s, or, you know, any of those type of games. And I think
it's Witcher 3, but we didn't get it.
But what I'm saying is, the only reason something like Vulkan is taking off is because the industry got its head out of its butt and said, we need something better than OpenGL, and we're locked into, you know, Direct 3D or DirectX or whatever version of it you want to say we're on. And they wanted an open library for development and something that was closer to the metal, so to speak. Mm-hmm. They got their butts behind Vulkan, and hey, look, things are building and going towards that direction because they got off their ass and said, we need this, so let us make this.
Yeah, actually, I think anytime Windows, or, well, sorry, not Windows, Microsoft makes a very bizarre move, or any company makes that is in the, you know, dominance, decides to flex their muscles a little bit too much, if it backfires, and it often does, it generally helps all of the other platforms that are competing with it.
Hmm.
I don't know. Here's the thing. Cheese, we've had this on the show before, and we've talked about this before.
Yeah, I feel like when you've got those kind of problems, like,
They're going to do it anyway. It's just until people push back, they won't do it. Then they'll push. They'll give them an inch, they'll take a mile. They'll go back and take 2 inches instead of, you know, a mile.
Yeah, it's like the pendulum doesn't swing as far back the other way. Like, it's always, they're still making progress towards nefarious goals. Let's call it nefarious goals, because I like that. Let's put a capital N, a capital G on there. It's nefarious goals. They're still making progress towards that. It's not huge progress, but the pendulum doesn't swing all the way back every time they try and push things. It kind of moves the center across, and we have to deal long-term with these problems anyway.
So I think Tim Sweeney's right in his criticism. You know, you have companies like AMD, Valve, Intel, all these people that are behind things like Vulkan. You don't have a group of people saying, okay, besides Valve, say, and, you know, mostly indie, I hate the term indie developers, but smaller studios porting to Linux. You don't see that, and you don't see people like Tim putting their weight and stock behind, this is the open platform we're choosing.
It's like their engine that they're pushing out there for other people to use. Linux support is there. I mean, there is a little bit of effort going on that front, I think.
There is.
Blurb would have been nice. Just a little thing. It's like, things like this, but...
He does state that he doesn't think Linux is a viable option.
Okay.
Or at least that is the full interview that I read.
Okay.
That he does...
I didn't get that part of the full interview, so...
That currently it is not... within its...
Okay, that's fair enough, then. I mean...
And I think that is a fair criticism, because we are, as Jesus said, a young platform, as far as when it comes to the concept of gaming.
Well, it's funny. I feel like we are and we aren't. Like, we used to have AAA support back in the early 2000s and late 90s and stuff. Like, we had that, but we didn't have any visibility to other users. Like, it was before the internet was a big thing. And it was before we could really participate in communities and be visible as Linux users in communities. And it's only recently, like since Humble and Steam and so forth have like really been pushing ahead with this stuff, that there are people who don't understand that we previously did have AAA support, who think that Linux support is only the domain of indies, right? It's a weird kind of reversal lost on a lot of people who don't have that kind of historic awareness.
I could be remembering wrong, but I remember buying the Quake 1 with all expansions big box for Linux at a store.
Quake 3 Metal 10.
Yeah, Quake 3 did. I don't know about 1, but that's the thing. Like,
when it had Linux support, there was at least a download.
They definitely had downloadable.
I didn't buy it until there was Linux support at the time.
Yeah.
Because I got terrible performance on Windows, and I was sick of running it in DOS. And this is before 3D accelerators were very common. So I was running it in software mode, and it ran so much better on the frame buffer than it did on DOS.
And this comes back to the stuff that we were talking about with ID before, is that it wasn't necessarily Carmack who was behind that. It's been other people who've worked at ID who've been getting the Linux Woody, as it were. You know, I don't know if you guys are familiar with that quote.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like, I think
the term scratch me, it ought to be...
yeah. Timothy Bessett was the last person with kind of a Linux priority.
And he left.
ID, and he doesn't work there anymore, yeah.
The thing is, even if we had the code, Carmack was always very good about making sure that the code was readable and portable, because they were about selling engines.
Carmack was the driving force behind the source releases.
Yes.
As I understand it. And so without him there, I don't see us... Mm-hmm. I don't see anybody getting access to ID Tech 5.
No, outside of Bethesda, that specifically they've stated that only people that are being published by Bethesda will be getting access to their engine.
Yeah, right.
Bummer. But, yeah. So, I think... Tim Sweeney has got some points.
No, certainly.
I think that a standardization around a platform, if you want to go that route and you're worried about a closed platform of Windows, you know, going the iOS route or whatever, you know, whatever.
Well, iOS is just as closed, right? Like, or even more closed.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. If essentially he's worried about...
Oh, if you're worried about Windows going like iOS, yeah.
Going to the iOS mentality, and you want... I don't... Android's not the paradigm of, you know, greatness, but if you want a open, quote-unquote, market or open hardware platform, you might want to look at the alternatives.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to require that the industry as a whole and the heavyweights in it look at those alternatives. Now, they're starting...
Like, I think having big-name middleware and big-name engine tech on Linux is what's going to enable people to consider it. You know, Unreal Engine, Tim Sweeney's company making Unreal Engine and providing Linux support's like a big step towards that, I think.
Absolutely.
Well, I was going to say, but do remember, it was the Linux community that made the editor available before Epic did.
Yeah, no, that's totally true. that the Linux community contributions have been huge there. But I think that it's, I don't know, I would love to see Epic do more to celebrate the value of the community contributions they've had and to recognize that input. Like, it made me really sad when I saw a lot of people going, yeah, Epic have finally added Linux support to Unreal Engine, they're great. And I'm like, yeah, but no, people outside of Unity did that. You know, they did all the legwork there.
Yeah, no, I
totally agree. But at the same time, like, to have them shipping it as an advertised platform, like, that's,
yes,
that's something as well.
And I do agree with you. Once you get the middleware, supporting the platform in and of itself, I think that'll help as far as standardization around, be it, you know, there's a lot
of...
It
just makes it more of an option, right? It makes it more accessible. And when things are accessible, then you don't have the problem like they had with Hard Reset, where presumably they made a start on exploring what would be involved with the Linux port and then had to say, nah, we can't justify doing it.
Exactly. But he's got some points, but I don't think the industry's looking at all its viable options currently.
I have trouble caring, honestly. I just, like, this is the same crap that Microsoft are always trying to do. This is... I don't need to care about it because I don't use it. But, well, I mean, it will have an impact on us, right? It'll have an impact on Linux eventually, I guess.
We'll get a few people to try Linux. That's
Here's the reason I put this in here. Because if you are having industry people say this, it drives me up a wall when they don't practice it.
Mm-hmm.
This is where I...
Well, they're going to ship Unreal Tournament for Linux, right? They already have...
They have a build system for...
Is that community-provided build?
I have...
Or is that something they're doing? Because I think it's something they're doing, I think.
I might be remembering wrong, but I think that they took over and they saw, like, oh, this works, okay.
I honestly have no idea, because honestly, other than the fact that the engine is available for Linux, I really have no interest in UT4.
But in terms of saying industry players and developers, if they've got a title that they're going to ship for Linux, then that's...
What I'm saying is, you know, this, if they're looking at the long game and they're saying this already, practice what you preach. I know it's baby steps, and I know it takes time to get there.
Yeah, but they are, aren't they? I mean, isn't... If Tim Sweeney's company is shipping games for Linux, or is planning to ship games, their forthcoming games for Linux, then they are practicing what they're preaching in terms of moving away from dependence on Windows, right?
But will that mean that their primary platform of development?
I don't know whether they're going to use it internally. I don't know.
Well,
It'd be great if they did.
I mean, for as a whole. The problem is the primary platform of development still, for the most part, is what? On a PC-based system is Windows.
I guess. I do all my software development on Linux.
Because you eat... Jeez. Because you do this weird thing called eat your own dog food.
Well, I don't know. Like, I stopped using... I stopped using Visual Studio before I stopped using Windows.
But anyways, what my point is that just practicing what you preach, eat your own dog food, so, you know, whatever terminology you want is the biggest thing that's going to change?
Go the whole hog or none at all. You just think, if you're going to say we want an open platform, you know, just dive in and do it.
Do a Valve.
Yeah.
As much gold. As I hate. As even much if as you, I hate.
What is a Valve, though? I mean,
okay, majority of their games for Linux immediately upon the Steam's availability. But the thing is, Valve ultimately doesn't have that many games, and they all use
the same engine, yeah. And I think I could be wrong. Everything at Valve is driven by internal passion, right? They've got to be people there who are interested in doing the work before the work gets done. So there was, like, the ports of the Gold Source engine only occurred because someone was excited about.
Or the fact that Gabe Newell basically just said, this is where we're going. Because let's be honest.
That pushed the client ahead, but I don't think that the original Gold Source titles, like Half-Life 1 and Blueshift and all that stuff, I don't think that was on the roadmap.
Anyway, I think this gets us into one of the things we've been talking about earlier, the lack of quote-unquote Linux sales, because the lack of market or the lack of, you know, whatever perception a dev might have or the reality thereof, like in Hard Reset's case. Not enough money was made on the Windows version of the game, OS X version of the game. Not viable to port to Linux because of lack of sales. Let's end this on good news, though. For the last 3 months, there has been continued Linux growth in market share. Now, and this has come from NetApps, which, oh my God, everybody is always taken with a grain of salt if you have looked at desktop market share numbers ever.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't feel like there's a lot of value in these kinds of analytics platforms.
The reason I find this interesting is not because of where it's coming from, which I take with a grain of salt. It's the fact that it's been it coincides with a continued growth in other aspects of. We've seen a continued continued uptick in the last couple of months for these Linux versions of Steam.
I thought that had been dropping over the past few months.
It has grown minutely over the last few months.
I don't know. I don't feel like the Steam hardware and software survey is a useful or meaningful indication of anything either.
I'm not saying it is, but what I'm saying
I wrote
is,
an article about its shortcomings, so it's a lot of fun.
But what I'm saying is that the available ways to track Linux, there's not many. And yes, you can talk about user, you know, agent switchers and all this other stuff. Simple, the fact of the matter is, if you look at it since April, it has gone up almost half a percentage point or so.
So that's, yeah, but is that even above the confidence threshold, and is that statistically significant within the undocumented amount of rounding that they do? Like, we don't know.
This is where I was getting into. On the flip side, while continued growth can be good, and it does show a sign, because, let's see, just looking at the article, you're looking at April was 1.65, May was 1.79, June was 2.02, July was 2.33. So depending on how, this is why I say take it with a grain of salt, depending on how much of a margin of error these actually have, then, you know, that's really where it breaks down to.
So that could just be like changes in the way they're calculating things. But let's just, for the sake of argument, let's take this as fact and go from there. That would be, it bears looking into, and I think that the hobbyist market of, that is not going to be attracted by in such a fashion. If it was anything, I would point to games and just like the fact that that little SteamOS icon keeps popping up on more and more games.
Well, like, there's also, there are a lot of other factors as well, like, particularly for this, like, net market share stuff. My Blu-ray player runs on Linux, and it's got a web browser, and I can check stuff out. Like, there are a lot of new devices that are web-enabled that are moving into a lot of spaces that are, Linux-based or using some other kind of free software operating system, which is fantastic. It's great, but it's I'm not going to be buying Steam games on my Blu-ray player, right?
No.
We're talking about fairly small movement, which can potentially equate to a large number of users, but we're viewing it on a scale where averaged across a month as well. A lot of the noise could be just averaged out, you know.
Mm.
It could be.
And with that, ladies and gentlemen, Cheese gets the last point in. That is the end of this episode. You can catch us on the next episode that we will be recording shortly. Life has finally calmed down for everybody. Everybody's no longer moving, and work has slowed down for us. So we can get back to recording episodes on a normal and editing them on a regular basis and in a timely manner. So we'll catch you guys on the next episode of the Gaming on Linux podcast. Peace out.